Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today's show is brought to you by Markham Search, an executive and staffing executive search company based in New York City with offices on both the East and the West Coast, servicing companies throughout the United States. Today we have with us on the show Sally Helgeson. Sally's work is widely regarded as the gold standard when it comes to women's leadership. Since the publication of The Female Advantage in 1990, which is still in print, she has written five more books in the field and speaks to audiences all around the world about these issues. Clients have included Microsoft, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, Prudential Financial, Pfizer, Textron, Hewlett-Packard, the World Bank, and dozens more. She has led seminars at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and Smith College, and her work has been featured in Fortune, The New York Times, Fast Company, and Business Week. She lives in Chatham, New York. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sally.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jennifer.
So why don't we start a little bit about your history? Obviously, I read your bio and people have a general sense about you, but I would love to know, how did The Female Advantage first come to be? What motivated and inspired you to go down that path?
The Female Advantage, I got started on that really as a result of my own experience in the work world. In the 1980s, I was in corporate communications, mostly as a speechwriter. And I was very much aware of what a poor job most of the organizations I was working for did really of understanding and valuing the talents of the women who were just starting to come in and populate them and not really hadn't achieved positions of much influence or authority yet. So I was fascinated by that. And at the same time, I was also reading a lot of books at the time that were being published for women who were entering the workplace, giving them advice on how to do things. And the primary advice they seemed to be giving was do everything you can to act like a man and adapt those behaviors. And I saw that organizations were changing, and I thought that that was not very good advice. And it was true at the time, whether the books were popular or written from an academic perspective. So I thought, let me create a study about how the best women leaders do things and document that, and maybe organizations will get a better understanding of what women have to contribute. The result of that was The Female Advantage, Women's Ways of Leadership, published in 1990, still in print. And really, I'm very proud to say it was the first book that focused on what women had to contribute rather than how they needed to change and adapt.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because as a woman entrepreneur myself and coming up into the workplace, I think I obviously missed your book, unfortunately, when I first started my business. And I was that jerk who, in fact, I'm writing a talk myself right now called I'm Recovering Asshole, because I saw that the powerful men who I saw out there in the business world, you know, my grandfather was a role model who fought in the Marine Corps and my father was a firefighter. And I'm like, okay, so if I'm going to be a successful woman in business, I'm going to go out there and kick some ass, pardon my French, and take some names. And unfortunately, that completely blew up in my face the first several years I was in business, and it gave me the opposite of what I wanted. So tell me, how do you shift the mentality from trying to change women's behavior to embracing what women have to contribute? How do we make that shift?
Well, I think first of all, and most importantly, and what I tried to do in that book was to articulate what the real strengths of the best women leaders are. And I'm not claiming, and I never made the claim that all women have those strengths or capabilities. But as I studied the best women leaders, what I saw was that they were very focused on building great relationships, not just their own relationships, but they were focused on creating positive relationships in the organization as a whole. They were comfortable with, as opposed to tolerant, of diversity. They themselves had been outsiders and understood the kind of value that people with fresh eyes and a fresh perspective could bring. They were comfortable with direct communication as opposed to communication up and down a chain of command. They knew how easily information could be distorted going up and down a chain of command. They liked putting themselves in the center of things rather than at the top. And this even played out in some instances in where they located their office, right in the middle, right in the thick of things. And finally, they were very good at bringing part of their identity and part of their skills from their private or domestic life into the workplace and vice versa. And a number of them had made the point to me that they were the same person as a mother, as a sister, as a wife, as a member of their community, as they were as a leader at work. So at the time in 1990, these were pretty, you know, perceived to be very soft kind of skills and not, you know, tough step up to the game leadership skills. But what's been fascinating and I think has been so powerful for me is to watch the way in which every single one of these skills has become more recognized as a mainstream and desirable leadership skill. When Female Advantage was published, it was still back in the era when Fortune magazine would have a monthly cover issue called America's Toughest Boss, and it would be a profile of someone who was just awful and brutal to his employees. And the subtext was always, well, this is what it takes. You wouldn't see that anymore. Things have changed, and I think that they've changed partly because of the influence of so many women coming into the workplace, but also the nature. One thing that has been fortunate is the nature of the technology being so networked and really web-like has also changed organizations. So they're developing a much more, a greater potential to be comfortable places for all kinds of people.
I think that's great. And so now, obviously, you've written 5 other books, and the one sitting on my desk as we speak is How Women Rise. Talk to me a little bit about the inspiration for this book for you and Marshall Goldsmith.
Yes, well, it's a great story. Marshall Goldsmith published a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And it was based on his many decades as an executive coach. In fact, he has been for the last 8 years the number one ranked executive coach in the world. And based on his experience of behaviors that tended to get in the way of successful people. It was a wonderful book. It sold over 1 million copies. Really big deal. And I do workshops for women leaders and aspiring women leaders all over the world. I've really been doing that for almost 30 years since The Female Advantage was published. And a number of years ago, I began incorporating a part into my workshops about being intentional in your career development. And as I did that, I started to use Marshall's book, looking at behaviors to embrace and behaviors to let go of. And what I became aware of as I used the book was that a lot of some of the behaviors in that book are very much gender neutral, but some of them tend to be more of a male, more characteristically male than female. And as a result, there are behaviors in that book that don't apply to that many women. And there are certainly behaviors that get in the way of women as they start to rise that were not included in that book. So I've known Marshall. We've been friends for about 25 years. And I said to him, encouraged by another colleague, a guy who was doing a lot of work with women at the time, he said, I said, it's just a natural that we would collaborate on a book that took the idea of the same behaviors that help you get to a certain point in your career will not necessarily get you where you want to go, and will in fact begin to get in your way as you move higher. But look at the behaviors specifically that get in the way of successful women as they seek to rise. So this book is the result of that collaboration. A lot of the behaviors are behaviors that I became very aware of in the work I've been doing with women, mixed with behaviors that Marshall has observed. Although his coaching practice has historically focused more on men, simply because he tends to coach CEOs, and there are a lot more CEOs who are men than women, but he has had experience working with women. So the behaviors really came out of our experience, and it seems to be resonating enormously. The book's already enjoying kind of shocking success, I have to say.
And congratulations.
It was
That's a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you. Lots of fun to work on, and I think it's going to have a real impact.
So let's talk about some of these habits that hold women back from their next promotion, their next raise, or that job that they really want. Talk to me about some of the behaviors that are holding women back, the ones for you that are just the, if anybody out there right now who's a woman or has a woman in their life could take something away from today's interview, what would be a couple of your favorites, so to speak?
I think a couple of the behaviors, the 12 behaviors, are really foundational. And I'm going to talk about three, and if we have time, I'll mention a fourth. One of the behaviors that I think is foundational and is often a problem for women is expecting others to spontaneously notice and reward your contributions and your hard work. I became aware of this a number of years ago. I did a partnership, a study of women who were partners in big accounting, law, and consulting firms. And one of the questions I asked these women partners was, what are the younger women, the women who are associates, who might one day be considered for partner, what are their greatest strengths and what are their greatest weaknesses? And what I heard was really very, almost unanimous, very consistent is probably a better way of describing it. What the female partners said, the younger women are superb in terms of the quality of the work they do. They cross every T, they dot every I, they're very conscientious, they show up, they're reliable, they do great quality work. And what they're worst at is getting known for the quality of the work they do. They said they often tend to hang back. They don't articulate it. They're uncomfortable drawing attention to it. If someone compliments the work they're doing, often they'll say, oh, well, my team did it, or, you know, this was, you know, they'll hand the credit off to collaborators. So they can be reluctant to figure out how to bring visibility, especially among higher ups, to what their achievements are. Now, when I talk about this in workshops, I often say, you know, how many women in this room feel that they are good at bringing notice to their contributions or their achievements? And there won't be very many hands typically that go up. But when I ask them, I often ask, I say, Why aren't you good at this? Why don't you do this? Why do you neglect to bring attention to the good work you do? And I hear one of two responses usually. The first is, if I have to act like that jerk down the hall, I'd rather not. If that's what it takes to get noticed around here, no thank you. Which is a very either-or approach when you think about it. It's either I'm a complete jerk who does nothing except brag and talk about myself, or I just sit quietly and hope someone notices what I do. So it's a it's a very sort of either-or picture of the world that I don't think is really that realistic when you think it through. The other thing that I would hear is, and I heard this often, well, I think that if I do great work, people should notice. And I always think, you know, if this were a perfect world, maybe they would notice, and perhaps they should notice. But people are so busy in this environment. We know that many people are distracted. People are heavily laden with tasks that they have to do. And people aren't necessarily paying that much attention to what everybody else is doing if they don't draw attention to it. Now, let me give you an example that we have in the book. But this is, it's really one of my favorite examples of all time of how somebody can have a behavior that's an impediment to them and can really turn it around easily. I was doing some work at a technology company out in the Silicon Valley, and there was a young woman engineer in my group, Ellen. And when I was talking about this, she said, "Oh boy, do I know what you mean." She said, "I went away for my performance review with my boss." And she said, "One of the things I really pride myself on is that I'm a good connector in this organization. I know a lot of people and I bring them together and people come to me and ask me things and I set them up with other people." She said, "I'm really connected." She said, "In a way that a lot of engineers aren't." She said, "When I went and got my performance review, we went on a retreat, and my boss said, 'You do wonderful work, but you need to be more connected.'" She said, "I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach because what I thought I was best at, he didn't even seem to know about." She said, "And I went away, and I felt really bad, and I felt, you know, maybe I don't even belong here. Maybe I shouldn't be working for him. He obviously doesn't appreciate me, blah, blah, blah." She said, "A couple weeks later, the thought came to her out of the blue. How would he know? I never told him. He doesn't watch the emails that come into my box. He doesn't monitor my phone calls. How would he know that I'm well connected?" She said, "And I thought about it, and I thought, you know, I really need to tell him." So she came up with a plan to send him every Friday just a quick, like two-line email. "Here are some of the people I connected with this week," and just some names, you know, best Ellen. And she didn't know how it was landing with him. He was getting it, but she didn't hear back. And she said about a month later, he came up to her and he said, "I'm so glad you're doing this. This is really important information. This is information I need to know because it shows me who our unit is connecting with." So to me, it was just a great example. Was she being the jerk down the hall, sucking up all the air? Not at all. She was just doing a little small intervention in order to bring attention to what her achievements were and her contributions were in a really appropriate way.
Yeah, I think that's so healthy. And it's funny that you say that because I just recently joined the corporate world myself after having owned my own company for 8 years. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the CEO of my division that I work with is he loves to just have a quick little email every day of just, "Hey, you know, any big things, any deals you're working on?" And, you know, every now and again, you get a "good job, well done," pat on the back. And but it's just nice because otherwise I'm in California, they're in New York. And in many offices, sometimes you might even work in the same office and not even see that somebody you work with in a week. So I think it's a great way to take accountability for it rather than being a victim in the situation.
Exactly. And that's really what we're advising. You know, take accountability. Once you recognize that something is getting in your way, find a way to start addressing it. And the point you bring up is really important because especially now when we so often have a virtual workplace and people are not necessarily co-located with their boss, or if they're in a matrixed organization, there's a lot of diversity in who reports to who. It's particularly important to have a plan of action to draw attention to what you're contributing. And if you look at it as helpful information, as opposed to being a jerk or sucking up all the air in the room, then you can get comfortable with the idea.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful because it's many of the things that I've noticed in business is the more that we try to force things, control people, control situations, the more that people resist us and it creates animosity, and the more that we're mimicking the behavior that sometimes we've been taught, at least I was taught from being a young girl, of this is how you are powerful. You control people and you tell them what to do. And true leaders lead by example and they help other people look good, but still without diminishing themselves, without sacrificing themselves in whatever partnership they're working in, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And really, that's exactly it. It's not either or. You can support others. You can bring attention to their achievements without diminishing your own. But it's really important to recognize that you have a responsibility for letting people know what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's it. It's if we look at most of our upsets as human beings, be it male or female, I think a lot of upsets and unfulfilled expectations and resentments in the workplace or otherwise come from lack of communication and lack of ownership and just looking at not in a how is it my fault, but hey, how could I have contributed to this situation where it could have turned out differently? And then you're fostering a win-win rather than a win-lose or a lose-lose situation.
That's exactly true. I really agree with that. And that what you're talking about really reflects the theme of this book. Another behavior that's common and is you can see how it would be allied to this with women is overvaluing expertise. Now, that sounds like shocking when you say that. You know, is it a problem to be an expert in something? But what we both find, is that focusing all your attention on mastering the details and doing a terrific job, while important, can use up a lot of bandwidth that you could be using to build a broader network of connections and to build more visibility. Both of those things are going to position you better as you trying to move higher and trying to get that job you really want. Because it's interesting to think, you know, when I interview a lot of women, they'll say, you know, I feel like I have to do a fantastic job here. Sometimes they'll say, you know, because I'm the first woman who's ever held this job and I feel like I need to prove that women can really do this job. So there'll be, you know, a lot of emphasis on mastering the details and not much thinking that, you know, showing that you can do a perfect job basically shows you're perfect at doing the job you have. It doesn't say that much about what the job you could have in the future. And it can also make you indispensable to your boss. We have a wonderful example in this book of a woman I worked with at a company in Boston, and she said that she was actually up for a job, a promotion to a different kind of business that she was very interested in. And her boss said to her, you know, I could have recommended you for this, he said, but I cannot afford to lose you. You're just too good. And she said, you know, what shocked her is that she actually felt good about that when he said that. And she said about a year later, another job came up similarly, and she walked into his office and she said, I will slip my wrist to get this job, and I need your help.
Oh,
and
she
said, he just stepped right up, and he said, of course I'll help you. But you know, she realized what a kind of mistake that she had made by saying, you know, oh, I feel so great because you've told me I'm too indispensable to even be recommended for something else. So I think that overvaluing expertise can be problematic. And it's really interesting because for years I have heard from search firms that there can often be a difference in the application letters for a certain position from women and from men. Whereas women will say, you know, I'm not quite sure I'm ready to do this job because I don't have X, Y, and Z skills, or I've never precisely done, you know, the tasks that you're describing. So they'll say that up front in their application. They said, where men will often say, of course I can do this job because I've done X, Y, and Z. And that, you know, half the time X, Y, and Z don't even necessarily apply, but that confidence really carries them along. And it's one of the reasons, you know, that men will get snapped up in a position because the woman is betraying from the start a little bit of lack of confidence. And I think when that happens, it happens because the woman is overvaluing expertise. And it's really understandable, especially if you're in a very male-dominated company or industry or sector, and you feel like you always have to prove yourself. You're going to focus on the expertise part. But it can, you know, it's one of those things, again, that can serve you well earlier in your career. But as you try to rise higher, you know, They're not looking for a subject matter expert or someone who can do a job expertly. They're looking for someone who has shown that they really know how to manage people. So it's something a little bit different. And I find that, you know, a lot of the women in the programs I do really resonate with having that behavior articulated for them.
So I have a question for you. As a businesswoman myself, one thing that I have been accused, quote unquote, of being throughout the years is too business-minded as a woman. Now, it's funny that in, you know, 2018, that could still be something that not necessarily, it's not always meant, I guess it's perspective as a negative, but I think it means there are women in business, like you've said, who are kind of softer and more fluffy and don't have to, not fluffy, I don't want to demean that. I want to say that who are just kinder, more empathetic, and less direct maybe sometimes in some situations. Yes. Do you find that in general, women who are business-minded, who can make tough decisions and who, like you said, don't have a problem of walk in the door, ask for the job and say why they're good for the job, is that something that other women are okay with, or is that still a threat to other women?
Well, I think it really partly depends. I mean, in my experience, it depends on how many women there are in an organization or in a sector. That when you have lots of women, there's a greater comfort with and tolerance of a range of behaviors from women. And that, you know, women understand that they can learn from all different kinds of behaviors that women will exhibit. I think when you have very few women and people are really overly conscious of every woman being a role model representing all women, which is certainly an expectation that men aren't saddled with, then you can have often less tolerance for those kinds of behaviors. I think it's really important, you know, on one hand, you know, as again, earlier in your career, one of the behaviors, one of the few that I actually don't have, which I'm glad to say, but one of the behaviors we have is this, we call the disease to please, the need to be a wonderful person to everyone, you know, which can get you into terrible trouble holding other people accountable. You can struggle with boundaries. You can certainly say say yes to too many things. That kind of orientation for women, because it's kind of expected, again, it can work very well up to a certain level. But at a higher level, it can really get in your way. And I think that at higher levels, especially, you know, when you go into any kind of partnership firm, anything like that, or sales, where you're expected to get the business, that being business-minded is hardly a critique. And I think it's also important, you know, it's really interesting. I think it's important that when women hear criticism from other women about behaviors, that the most important thing to do and the most helpful thing to do is ask some questions about it. Like, you know, if somebody says, you know, I think you're a little business-minded, another woman says that, then, you know, that's interesting. What do you mean by that? You know, and what is she saying? Is she saying that you're transactional in terms of how you treat people in your relationships? Is she saying that, you know, you're more comfortable using your network in a strategic way? Something that might be valuable for her, or is she saying that she feels that your mannerisms or the way you communicate with people is a little brusque and a little off-putting? The first two, you know, getting her to articulate what's behind her observation. The first two are things she could think about. You know, things that she might benefit from learning from you. The third thing, which is, you know, being brusque or, you know, not seeming to have, being impatient or not seeming to have time for people or approaching your relationships in a very transactional way, then that might provide some information for you in terms of how other people perceive you as treating them. But, you know, a phrase like, you know, too business-minded or too ambitious, there's what is really being said specifically there? I think that's important because the others are just perpetuating stereotypes, and women can do that as well as men.
Yeah, I think that's, I love your approach to that because it's something that comes up again and again is getting curious rather than assuming, because it's so easy with different stereotypes to assume good or bad. Either way, you could assume, oh, that means she thinks I'm the smartest person in the world, or, oh, that means that she thinks I might be a little bit too, like you said, brusque. But do we really know until we ask those kind of how, what, when, where, why questions and dig a little deeper? And either way, not only can that other person then discover something about themselves, the more that we get curious, the more we discover about ourselves rather than just assuming things about other people.
I love the way you're using the word curious there, but it also reminds me, I mean, I think one of the reasons that our book, How Women Rise, is so valuable and is really having an impact is not just that we're articulating and describing these behaviors, but that we also set forth a real plan of action for dealing with them. And the, you know, first is start, you know, choosing one behavior. Say you look at these and think, oh my goodness, at 12 behaviors, seven of them are typical of me. Where do I start? Just start. Start with one thing and start with one small action. But the second thing, and I think this really speaks to what you've been talking about, we advocate, don't do it alone. By not doing it alone, what we mean is enlist allies to help you get more information about how what you're doing is being perceived, how it's landing. Engage other people in the work of helping you get better. Say you're trying to, one of the behaviors we have is too much. We call it too much. It's offering too much information, too much disclosure, too many words, not being crisp and concise. You've seen that often with women. You know, you come in, you're trying to make a presentation. You say, well, let me tell you how I came up with this idea. Well, actually, you know, whoever it is probably just wants to hear the idea, not the entire background story. So that's one of the behaviors we have. Say you've gotten some feedback that you're perceived of as being kind of all over the map or not crisp, not concise. Then instead of feeling terrible or, you know, thinking like, you know, well, I'm going to model myself exactly on some other person, the helpful thing is to enlist allies, people you trust, people you know, with helping you become more so. Say you're going into a meeting and you can say to a couple people beforehand, you know, I'm really working on being more concise in my communication. Will you just watch me when it comes time for me to present and give me any feedback? If you think I'm working on it, do you think I'm doing better? Do you think, is there something you could recommend? Or you could say, you know, what has worked for you in terms of becoming more crisp and more concise? And use it as a point to really gather some information from other people about it. And, you know, don't, if they say something you don't agree with, don't say, oh, I don't agree with that, or I don't really think I did that. Just say, thank you. Thank you. You know, you ask somebody to help you. They gave you their thoughts. You don't need to comment on it. You don't even need to say that's a wonderful idea. You can just say thank you. But it's very effective to engage other people. You get other people to hold you accountable for change. You broaden your relationships in a really positive way. And it also advertises the fact that you're changing to people because, you know, people are busy. They don't necessarily notice. They may have a picture of you in their mind as one thing, you know, as a, you know, kind of a cold fish, for example, or someone who's rather brusque or lacks, you know, empathy. They may have that picture of you in their mind. You're working on it. You're trying to change. Well, they're not necessarily noticing. But if you say, you know, I'm really working on this behavior, I've had some feedback on this, and I'm trying to get better about it. You know, then people will notice, oh my goodness, she seems a lot more relaxed or open or, you know, friendly than I had perceived. They'll notice it because you suggested that they should notice it by asking them to help. So it's a great advertising technique. So I think that that's one of the, you know, we've got lots of ideas in the book for how to do that. We both used it in our coaching practices to great success. And I think it's a very, very good technique for beginning to make some positive behavioral changes that can really set you up to be more successful and to get rid of some stereotyping that, you know, or some behaviors that have held you back in the past.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that you are offering all these tips because it's just about perspective. If we can just shift even a few degrees the way we're looking at something and enroll other people or have conversations with those around us, what we're up to, you and I can have the most profound, inspirational conversation of all time today. And somebody out there listening might say, wow, I just absolutely love what Sally had to say. And then they go home and they don't talk about it. And if you don't talk about the things that you're up to with the people personally or professionally, nobody's going to hold you to account and it'll soon fizzle and die. And you'll find yourself repeating the same bad habits over and over, any one of these 12 habits that are holding you back. And it's just kind of a fun game to play. What if you went to your best friend, to your husband or wife, or to your sister or brother or mother or father, boss or colleague, and said, hey, I'm playing this game of the 12 habits I'm trying to break in the next year. Let's do one a month. And I'm going to ask you to be my accountability buddy for this. And it's just something really fun. In fact, one of my colleagues in my office gave me a list of the things she wants me to hold her accountable for. And so if she ever veers off that list and doesn't hold herself to account for the things she's committed to, then I just get to use a code word, say armadillo, or ask her to come in and be like, hey, remember exactly. When you said that you were committed to X, could you see where maybe this wasn't X? And it's really inspiring because then you get to work in partnership with others.
It's very inspiring. I've used myself, I've used peer coach for 9 years. I've had the same peer coach for 9 years. We hold each other accountable for changes we're trying to make. You know, we have probably four or five fairly brief phone conversations every week. You know, how's that going? How are you working on that? You know, I'm trying to, you know, get better on social media. She's trying to assert her boundaries more in some of the nonprofit work she does. You know, very different challenges from one another, and we really help one another on it. And I think, you know, I was the accountability part and also the perspective. You know, I had said to my husband, you know, I realize that I'm impatient. He's a very patient person. I'm not. I move quickly. And I said, I realize, you know, of course, since you've been telling me for 20 years that I can be impatient, and I'm really going to be trying to work on that. So, you know, if you notice me being impatient, you know, feel free to mention it. Well, he has certainly felt free, but it's been very helpful to me because I can see it in real time. And because I asked him, to point it out instead of, like in the old days when he'd say, you're so impatient. I'd go, yeah, but you blah, 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 you know, forget it. It's such a waste of time. I would just say, thanks for pointing it out. And then I'd, you know, take a breath and try to be a little more patient. So it's a much more adaptable way of being. And I think it's extremely powerful in the workplace, you know, to ask for that kind of feedback or even ask, you know, Marshall calls it feed forward. You're not asking, you know, how did I do there? But you're saying, hey, what's worked for you? I'm trying to, you know, you look like you're, you know, you're really good. I mean, say what you talked about, the business minded part. I could say to you, you look like you're really, really good at leveraging the relationships you have, not just building them. I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to become more business minded. What works for you? How have you been able to be successful in that? Do you have any tips that I could learn from you? So that those kinds of things are really, really helpful. And I love the way you framed it as almost a game. You know, I'm trying to get better at something. I'm trying to improve my score as a patient person or a good connector or someone who brings, you know, who has visibility in the organization or someone who's a concise communicator. And how do you know that unless you get, you know, other people helping you identify that you're either doing a good job or, guess what, maybe not so good a job. You have to be open to hearing that or you're not going to improve.
Yeah, you got to be open to the feedback either way. Well, Sally, I could talk to you all night long. And I do want to make sure, though, that we tell people where to find the book and want to leave them as well with one or two little points that you would love people to walk away with. So before we get into where to find the book, is there anything you want to recap or any points you've already made or something you didn't get to address today that you want our listeners to walk away from today's interview with?
Yes, exactly. One of the things I want to make very clear that we focus on the behaviors that are getting in women's ways, because that's something women can control. It's not that we imagine that there are no cultural or structural impediments that women face in organizations. We're very aware of that. We're not trying to blame women and say, well, the reason more women haven't gotten successful is because of, you know, their behaviors. That's not what we're saying. We're saying, yes, there are structural and cultural issues in many organizations and many sectors, although that is continually, if slowly, changing. But there are also things that women themselves can control. And guess what? The real changes that I've seen in organizations over the 30 years I've been watching this upfront as a result of having published almost 30 years, The Female Advantage, Women's Ways of Leadership. What I see is that organizations and institutions are changing primarily because there are more women in them, and there are more women who have positions of influence and authority. So they're becoming friendlier and more human places for people to work just because they're drawing from a broader range of human talent. So that's what we're really after here. It's not trying to say, oh, women are their own problem. It's trying to say, hey, here's some things that you can control, that you can act on. Why not give that a start?
Brilliant. I love it. So the book, let's tell people, where can they find the book? Tell us about any websites. If people wanted to use you or Marshall as an executive coach, where would they find more information about that?
Sure. The book is available everywhere that books are sold, in retail stores. I'm in Chicago now on a book tour, and I got to my local airport in Albany, New York, and there was the book up there on the top shelf. It's available. I checked it out. I arrived at O'Hare. There was the book. So you can basically find it in bookstores. You can certainly get it at all major online providers, or you can go to the How Women Rise website that our publisher has put up. You can certainly order it through my own website, SallyHelgeson.com, and learn more about what I'm doing and the workshops and the programs that I deliver for women leaders and for organizations seeking to become more inclusive. And Marshall's website is Marshall Goldsmith Library, and we're both very active on LinkedIn. So also just send us a connect message on LinkedIn, Marshall Goldsmith or Sally Helgeson, and join the conversation about the book, because we're getting a lot of feedback, and listeners can all be part of that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sally. I could have talked to you for hours about this. I know we didn't even get into 7 or 8 of the other habits. So all the more reason to go out there and buy the book, How Women Rise, Break the 12 Habits Holding You Back from Your Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. And as always, to everybody out there listening, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you missed any portion of the show, it will be available immediately after the show on the LA Talk Radio website under the Get Yourself the Job page in the archive section, or you can find the full episode later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to tune in next week with Dr. Mark Goldston talking about his book, Just Listen. What if we learned how to listen more effectively? Thank you again for joining us today, Sally, and have a wonderful rest of your week out there.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.